don't fall in love with an asset. We've had guys fall in love with assets, and so then they end up stretching and stretching and stretching and coming back. Don't do it. The numbers don't lie, and just trust the numbers, trust your underwriting, and don't go outside your comfort zone.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Reed Bennett, CCIM, serves as National Council Chair of Multifamily Properties for SVN International and a Senior Vice President for SVN Chicago Commercial. As a licensed managing broker for over 20 years, he focuses primarily on the sale of apartment communities across the Midwest and also teams up with members of his council to serve clients across the country in over 150 markets. Reed prides himself on understanding the nuances of an analysis of multiple unit apartment dwellings in low-income Section 8 and Section 42 communities. Reed, welcome to the show.
Hey, Sam. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
The pleasure's mine. Where are you based out of?
I'm based in Chicago.
Chicago, Illinois. My gosh. I've had a few guests come on the show from Chicago, and I tell all of them the same thing. Every year for my birthday, and I won't name the pizzeria I ship it from, but I ship overnight FedEx, or my wife does, because it's the same birthday present every year, a frozen pizza that they put on pack on dry ice, and they ship a bunch of frozen pizzas to me out of one of my favorite Chicago pizzerias. So lucky you, or lucky me, I don't live in your city, because otherwise I'd just be enormously fat from eating pizza.
That sounds good. I could probably guess which one it is.
You know, we don't want to play favorites. We might start a war the same as we start a war if we set our favorite barbecue here in Memphis. So either way, hey, you know, the same questions I ask everybody who comes on this show, Reed, can you quickly tell us, where did you start? Where are you now? And how did you get there?
That's a good question. Well, I mean, I started my real estate career here in Chicago in 2001. It was a boutique, multifamily focused investment sales firm. I was the youngest by about 25 years. So it was a bunch of dinosaurs that were putting out one page offering memorandums with just the numbers. So I started in the neighborhoods of Chicago. I would go up and down the streets. I would take pictures back, you know, in 2001, the digital cameras would hold about 90 photos, if you remember that.
I do.
So I would take about 90 photos. I'd come back in. I'd catalog them all. I would look them up on the assessor's office, figure out who owns them. And I would take a zip code in Chicago and go a zip code by zip code until I had the entire northwest side of Chicago tracked. Actually, everything I sold from 2001 until probably 2007 was to condo converters. I was 25 years old. I remember thinking every single apartment building in America is going to be converted into a condominium. I mean, I believed that. That's how fast it was going. I had 176 condo converters in the northwest side of Chicago in my database alone. So started doing that. I actually didn't even know how to run income and expenses on a property until after 2007, which is when I went and got my CCIM designation, when things kind of shifted because it didn't matter. All I was doing was measuring the units with a laser measure, telling the guys, you know, here's how big the kitchens, bathrooms, you know, living rooms, you know, you can convert this dining room into a bedroom and add extra value to the condo units. And that's all these guys cared about. I mean, at that time I remember there was one particular instance where the lady did not want to disturb any of her tenants. So we went into the basement and she kind of looked up and we saw the firewall. She said, here's where the living room is. Over here is where the dining room is. You know, here's where the bedrooms are. You can see the soil stack. So, you know, here's where the bathrooms are. And I remember going out to the car and we wrote a contract on the hood of my car. And the guy goes, take it back in there. I mean, that's how hot it was with conversion. So I gave it back to her and we'd sign it up right there. I mean, those days are done. But then after the condo bust really happened, I started moving out into suburban markets to garden style apartment complexes and started moving further and further outside of Chicago across the Midwest and getting involved in, you know, not only market rate, but affordable housing. And that's, you know, the Section 42, the low income housing tax credit, LIHTC deals, and project based Section 8 HAP contracted properties. And that's where we are right now, working in both arenas.
That is fantastic. I love, you know, a lot of things in your story. One is just how fast things have changed.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, 20 years ago, yes, taking pictures, 90 pictures, and then trying to compare into the assessor's office and creating your own version of Google Maps. One file at a time. My gosh, that's a tedious process.
Absolutely.
So how things have changed, and then just how investor appetite and demand changes, right? Condo conversion thing. I mean, is that all but dead at this point?
That's all but dead. I mean, in fact, a lot of the condos in and around the Chicago market are being purchased and deconverted back into apartments. If you would have told me that in 2007, 8, 9, that that's what was going to be happening in 2020 and 2021, I would have bet my house that it wouldn't happen. And that's what's happening. I mean, so guys are going through the brain damage of, I mean, here in Illinois, you only have to have 75% of the condo association approval in order to force, the, you know, if there's a 25% holdout, if 75% agree, you can force the 25% to sell at the current market rate price. So it's kind of a strange business. I know I have a number of clients. That's all they do. It's, you know, you kind of have to have a steel stomach to do that, but that's what they're doing. And in fact, it's the properties are more valuable now as apartment buildings than as condos, which I mean, I still can't get my brain wrapped around that.
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding. Yeah, that is just interesting how demand changes, investor sentiment changes. And yeah, that's just wild. And nobody has that crystal ball, right?
Shoot, if you would have told me in April of 2020 that pricing would have gone up and cap rates would have compressed, I would have eaten my house as well. I mean, I remember because I host a quarterly national multifamily call internally for SVN, and I had lenders on. And the call was, it was the last Thursday of the month in April of 2020, going into to May of 2020. And I remember the lenders were saying, tell your multifamily owners to expect 25 to 50% collections May 1st. I mean, I got off that call, you know, I was trying to put on a smiley face to host that call. I got off of it that night. I said to my wife, I said, should we stop paying our mortgage to get ahead of this and start, you know, is this going to be a 3-year downturn again? It just amazes me that it's gone through the roof again. So I'm sure you're seeing the same things when you're trying to come up with some multifamily deals. I mean, the competition is ridiculous right now.
Oh, it is. It is. And, you know, who knows, you know, where this all shakes out in the end. Again, kind of like the condo conversion story. It's like, we don't know where this leads.
Right.
In the end, have we just repriced assets with all of this money printing? And now this is just the new pricing compared to the old. It's all relative to the amount of money we've actually got in the supply. I don't know. In the system, who really knows? But that's wild. Talk to us really about what you guys are seeing, you know, from the brokerage perspective on affordable and market rate. But before we dig into that, can you define those terms for us, please?
Okay. Well, to define all of the affordability components to the affordable housing, it would take another podcast entirely for that. But basically, when I say market rate, that just means, you know, regular market apartment housing. So just when you see your typical apartment unit that anybody from a professional to, you know, a student is renting, that'd just be a market rate. When you get over to the affordability side, that's in, usually if you're going into the Section 42, that's the low income housing tax credit product, that is income restricted. And typically it's about 60% or below the median area income or the area median income at the AMI. And so you just have to income qualify the tenants. And that was just a program that was created in the 80s to provide affordable housing in areas where there really isn't any. And then on the extreme side of the affordable housing is the project-based Section 8 or the HAP contract, which is housing assistance payments. And that's where the entire building is under a Section 8 contract. So the owner of that building gets one check for all of the tenants rather than voucher systems. For those of you familiar with, you know, the voucher system out there.
Right. That's fantastic. Yeah. Thanks for taking the time to quickly explain that in what detail you can on a short podcast here. Walk us through what you guys are seeing in the market. I know prices, we talked a little bit about, are, you know, going through the roof, but how are you guys finding value as brokers for your buyers?
Well, so we track every single existing apartment complex, 50 units and above, across the Midwest and in various other parts of the country. We also have about 5 systems that track the rents. A couple of our systems are connected to the USPS system, where it tracks open and operable mailboxes. So that's how they track occupancy on apartment complexes. And so we just utilize a lot of it. And we give all this stuff to our clients, you know, looking to buy property, clients looking to sell, just to help them figure out what the value is of a certain property. So, you know, in this market, it's been very difficult to pin down values, which is why I've seen a couple people sell their deals off market. It's not the market to do that, because there are so many different execution strategies for a certain asset. You just don't know where the highest and best price is going to come until you take that out to market really having great success doing call for offers during this time period, rather than pricing. We used to try to price everything. And so that's setting a target. And then people just try to hit that target. Some of these deals, if we set that, we don't know what the value is anymore. I mean, so if we can come up with a value range with the owner and then say, we reasonably expect offers to come in, and we kind of do a black swan evaluation to say, hey, here's where a majority of the offers are going to come in this range. Here's where the low ballers are going to try to come in and steal it from you. And then here's where we're looking for the black swan, the group that has capital, that their cost of capital is 2%. So they're able to try to undercut everybody else. I mean, we're also looking at significant hard earnest money deposits day one. I mean, I just had a client lose out on a deal in, I think it was Mississippi, and it was a small deal. It was like an $8 million deal. Somebody came in with a $2 million hard earnest money deposit day one, blew him out of the water. So it's just been crazy what we're seeing out there in this market.
How do buyers protect themselves, and how can they create value? I guess, what are you seeing them do to create value in such a competitive environment?
Well, I think there are a number of ways, and a majority of it comes from the data that you have available. If you have data, like we use a number of systems, there's a couple systems that I use that tracks, it's connected with the Yardie management software, and it can track around the property. As long as there are seven or more properties on the Yardie platform, it can give you an aggregate of income and expenses for all of those properties, so you can underwrite the deal within that market without even having, you know, the exact income and expenses from an owner. So certain systems like that, and then we cross-check it with two other systems. If you have that available to you and are very strong in a certain market, you can do that kind of non-refundable day one if you know the property, have a pretty good feel for it. I mean, typically, the earnest money is refundable if there are environmental issues or title issues. So things like that that you have no idea about, that's the only thing that'll save you with non-refundable earnest money that I've seen in the contracts.
Right, right. That's really interesting. And talking about, you know, the data, you know, maybe that you guys have at your fingertips, what's a good strategy for guy off the street or a small firm off the street to get their hands on that complex of a data set?
Well, rather than trying to buy all these systems themselves and spend the hours to do that, I would just align yourself with a broker that's in that market that specializes with multifamily. I'm happy to share these systems, especially when a buyer comes to me and says, look, I'm looking at this property. You know, can you share the information that you have? I mean, even if I'm not involved in the deal, I'll share it with them if it's a relationship that I have. So, I mean, we have one of our systems that we use. It shows you the differences between studios, ones, twos, three bedrooms with the comp set, and tells you exactly where you are as it relates to the competitive set on a per square foot, a unit mix, or a unit price, you know, and what all the amenities are with each one of those properties. So you can, we've identified deals where they were about 40 cents a square foot below the market. So those are the kind of deals where you see traded at a four cap or a three cap. You're like, how the hell did this guy do this? Well, it's because day one, he's going to go in there and raise the rents $250 without even putting any kind of value add into it. And you're going to make it an 8.5 cap, you know, after year one. So I would look for the regular investor that's trying to find deals. If you're familiar with the market, driving up and down your market daily, you know, you look for signs of, you know, deferred maintenance on the properties. I mean, I went to a property in my market that the doors were all open going into the corridors, and the shutters were missing, and you can see the fascia is like coming off, and they're not repairing simple things that they're not repairing. The grass is too tall. I mean, that's signs of distress, and those would be targets to take a look at. Also, I would look at long-term ownership. Again, majority of the brokers are tracking how long the owners have had a property. I mean, we've sold a couple deals where owners had owned them for over 40 years. And when you're in at that kind of a basis, you don't care about pushing rents. So those are the great value add where, you know, you're 100, 200, 250 under market walking in day one. I also love month-to-month leases. A lot of people are afraid of those. We sold a 142 unit deal that had month-to-month leases. They were all $200 under. We sold it to the group. The first month they owned it, they signed 118 of the 142 leases at $100 higher. And all they did was say, look, you can stay month-to-month, but we're raising you $200. If you sign an annual lease, we'll only raise you $100. they got everybody else the next month. And then the following year, they raised them 10%. So, I mean, that went from a $5 million deal to a $12 million deal, you know, in 2 years.
Right. Just some basic strategy in how they're going to go about raising rents to more market pricing.
Yeah.
That's brilliant. That is brilliant. I love some of those things that you're talking about, you know, looking for long-term owners. Well, you know, you are the multifamily chair for SVN. Is that right?
That's correct.
So how many brokers work underneath you across the U.S.?
Well, they're not underneath me. So everybody's in their own office, but we have about 266 multifamily focused advisors in the 225 offices around the country. We're in every single market, whether it's primary, secondary, and most of the tertiary markets around the United States. So what I've really enjoyed, especially in this position, is I've been able to work with a number of my colleagues around the country that are boots on the ground in all these markets. And so in essence, I can help clients of mine in any market they want to enter, whether it be buying, selling, or they just need, you know, market analysis. We're able to do that with, you know, a lot of my colleagues throughout the country. I mean, right now we have about six deals that we're working on, you know, about 2,500 units around the country, just with some of my colleagues that are in different markets, from Texas to New York to the Dakotas, Midwest, you know, all over the place.
That's fantastic. I love that. When you guys have, you know, your quarterly calls, I know you said you host that quarterly call. Talk to us about some of the buzz maybe that is had on those calls. Like, can you give us some any insight into maybe some of the things that we wouldn't expect that is kind of the buzz or from the street level with all of your brokers?
Well, I think that everybody is experiencing a similar situation that we are. You know, we have advisors that, as they're putting the OMs together, the offering memorandums for the deals, people are calling them and they're saying, hey, I'm putting this deal, this 150 unit deal together right now with the OM. And people are saying, where is it? And we're saying, okay, look, I'm sending a contract to you. Right? I mean, so we're putting deals under contract. And so are many of my other clients or colleagues across the country prior to even completing the OMs. So right now, I mean, we have 54.5 million of multifamily under contract. We have 45.2 million of LOI, and then we're marketing 55.7 million. That's more than a 2 year period in my 20 years in the business, you know, as far as activity. So the activity is just crazy. We're calling it smash and grab time. You don't know how long it's going to last.
Well, that's it. I mean, how long will it last? And, you know, does that give you any concern that at some point the music will stop and everyone's going to have to find a chair?
Well, after going through 2008, 9, and 10, I'm always paranoid of that, you know, but as you know, there are cycles. Everything goes in cycles. There's always ups and there's always going to be downs. There's always going to be buys of your life each year is the way I look at it. You're always going to find a deal of a lifetime every year if you're looking hard enough and connecting with enough people. Whether it's a, you know, 2008 market, 9 market, 2020 market, it doesn't matter. There are reasons people are selling in every single market, and there's a reason you should buy in every single market.
I think that's really sound advice, you know, because the one line that I never listened to is, well, all the good deals are gone. Like, whatever. That I don't buy that. You know, with that being said, you can always find the deal of your life in any particular year. I think the more intriguing part of that kind of analysis is that we never know why someone's selling.
Yes.
So often it's not the money. We would assume, you know, from this side of the table, it's always the money, but you never know why someone is punting the asset that they're punting.
I would agree with you. I would say more often than not, it isn't the money. It's some other reason in their life. Mm. I remember when I first got into the business, I would call everybody in this certain location, the certain zip code of Chicago. I met with this gentleman, you know, he's probably 72 years old. It was his only apartment building in Chicago. And, you know, he said, I'm never selling this asset. 6 months later, I saw it hit CoStar that it closed. And I called him up. I said, you just told me not too long ago, you'll never sell. He said, look, I wasn't, but I got prostate cancer and I wanted to spend the rest of my years with my grandkids as much as possible. So, I mean, you never know. Partnership disputes are my favorite as well. First off, because they're going to sell the asset. Second off, now I have two clients, you know.
What do you see on that front? I mean, let's chase that rabbit hole for just a second. or what do you think are some of the more prominent reasons that partnerships are falling apart in the real estate space?
Well, I think there are a number of ways to run, especially multifamily assets. And most of the times, partners aren't going to agree. Some of the partners want to working on a portfolio of assets right now with a group. There were three partners involved. One or two of them wanted to just refinance, pull all their equity out, which to me, I mean, I love that concept. If you have zero equity into a deal and it's generating you, you know, the returns that were at or better than what you bought the deal, why wouldn't you do that and keep going? But the one group said, look, I don't want to put another mortgage on this. So that was a reason for them to dissolve. They ended up buying each other out. And there are just a number of reasons. Some people want to add value, continue adding value. Some people just want to take the cash flow and milk the property. I mean, just like anything else, you know, partners for life when you're married, things come up that were different than when you started. So no different in business.
It's really not. And I think a lot of times we want to investigate those what went wrong scenarios just so we can learn from them. And in the end, I think maybe there's no way to ever mitigate all of those potential, you know, ways that deals go sideways.
If you don't have a partnership agreement that everybody signs at the beginning, that would be one red flag with a partnership. I mean, where everybody has specific roles and they know what their roles are. I've seen a number of groups, you know, just kind of haphazardly put, you know, deals together. Some guys have the management ends. Some guys have the capital raise ends. So along the lines, people start saying, well, wait a minute, I'm doing all the work here, you know, on the management side. Person saying, well, yeah, I raised all the money for you to get that, you know, so it's like there are no egos in multifamily at all. I mean, speaking of that, I mean, that's one of the reasons I have a client that says I could never sell my deal direct to a buyer because my ego is so big, I would just screw it up. He goes, that's why I need you to take what I'm saying, soften it up and deliver it.
I like that. You need someone to run interference for you. That's an honest soul.
Right.
I appreciate, you know, that honesty. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
When you think about, you know, the multifamily space, we've talked about, you know, market rate deals, affordable rate deals or affordable deals. We've talked about just kind of the fear of where we are in the market cycle and what you guys see, you know, happening. Is there anything else that really inside of multifamily that you would say that is the timely piece of information that you wish other people were thinking more about right now?
That's a good question that I wish someone was thinking more about. I think that people are really focused on inflation coming up. I just had a conversation yesterday with an owner that, you know, I just said, hey, would you consider taking a look at a crazy price, you know, for your deal? Because he was telling me, I can't find anything. Everything I get involved in, there's five other offers that are way above mine. I said, well, do you want to take advantage of this market on the flip side and sell your 120 unit deal? He said, no, I'm waiting for inflation to hit. My deal is going to be worth way more. So I think people have to be mindful of that inflation is coming, you know, a lot faster than wages are increasing in this country right now. And that's kind of concerning.
Right. Can you walk us through why that is concerning?
Well, it's concerning because, well, look, just simplistically, you know, you're talking about the cost of a gallon of milk. I mean, if your wages aren't going up, but the cost of milk is going up. I mean, obviously, we've seen what happened with lumber and copper for the construction. All these things are going up, but wages are not. It's kind of just cause for concern because it's just going to be outpricing everything. But what that's doing in the multifamily space is it's actually positive for the multifamily space because it's widening the gap for homeownership and forcing people to remain renters. I mean, we're a renter nation. People are not interested in buying homes, especially from the downturn of 2008, 9, and 10. Gen Xers and millennials saw their parents lose their house in the downturn. They're saying, why would I do this? Why would I get involved? Especially if they want to be mobile. If you want to go from Chicago to San Francisco to New York, wherever you want, you don't want to put your condo on the market, wait for that to happen. They want to be nimble and be able to rent. And to me, I think that's a much smarter thing to do. Because you still have to come up with a 5 to 10 to 20% down payment for a home. Why not take that money and invest it, you know, with you guys in a multifamily deal?
Right. And rent where you want. Yeah, that's interesting. I guess one thought with that is if inflation does happen, right, inflation goes up, wages remain the same, then that means there's even less money available for people to pay towards rent. Which if there's less money for people to pay towards rent, that means there's less NOI necessarily on the bottom line. And if these are traded as a multiple of NOI, then maybe the asset prices of your multifamily holdings don't go up.
That's a good point.
I don't know.
That's a good point. I mean, you can only stretch the rental rate so much until the market starts pushing back, saying, look, I can't afford it. I'm going to move out further and move out of the core into the suburban markets, or I'm going to move out of the suburban markets into tertiary markets just because I can't afford this anymore, especially with the fact that people don't necessarily need to be in an office anymore in the core markets. So we see a lot of people that were downtown in high rises in Chicago move out to the Chicago suburbs. They get a lot more space. They get an extra bedroom for less money. So if we continue to see this, that's going to be interesting for the higher priced multifamily assets in the country.
Yeah, this whole thing is certainly an interesting time that we're living through. And blueprint for this certainly has not been printed. So I guess that doesn't make sense at all. Blueprint hasn't been printed.
You're right. I know what you mean.
Thank you, Reed. You are our gracious guest. Few questions here before we jump off the show. If you were to help our listeners avoid just one mistake in real estate, what would it be and how would you avoid it?
I think the mistake would be don't fall in love with an asset. We've had guys fall in love with assets, and so then they end up stretching and stretching and stretching and coming back. Don't do it. The numbers don't lie, and just trust the numbers, trust your underwriting, and don't go outside your comfort zone. The other thing is don't go outside the asset class that you know. What we've seen also, another reason why I think multifamily has been ridiculous as far as the cap rate compression and increase in value is a lot of the retail and office buyers stopped buying those asset classes and jumped into multifamily without understanding it. And I think that's going to be where a lot of those groups are going to be caught not understanding the product. We know multifamily owners that have tried to get into the office space and lost their hat in the office space, or tried to get into retail, or tried to get into, you know, single tenant net lease deals and didn't understand, you know, the lease terms. So I would say learn your lane, stay in your lane, and don't fall in love with the deal.
I love that. That's sound advice. That is very sound advice. Thanks for sharing that. Next question for you. When it comes to investing in the world, what's one thing you're doing right now to make the world a better place?
Well, you know, I just started coaching multifamily advisors recently, and it's been really nice to kind of give back after being in the business for 20 years and kind of learning the ups and downs and what to do and not to do, and to provide that back. Every year we go to the food depository and volunteered around Christmas time for them. So those are a couple of things we're doing now.
That's fun. That's fun. Both professional and personal give back. That's super cool. Reed, if our listeners want to get in touch with you, what is the best way to do that?
Well, you can reach me on my cell, which is 773-251-7342. Or my email, which is reed.bennett@svn.com. That's R-E-I-D, period, B-E-N-N-E-T-T at S-V-N, samvictornancy.com.
Awesome. Reed, thank you so much for your time today. I do appreciate it.
Absolutely, Sam. Thank you.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.